All right, let's start. Let's start over here up to the Mizmah Chaf Aleph. We're up to Pasik. Let's go to Pasik Dalet. Yesterday we discussed at length the Aresha Sifasa Bal Monata Sela. We had a whole Chiddush Aresha Sifasa. It means the utterance of his lips, or it means the permission, the request for permission. Derech Eretz. The Melech HaMashiach is a person who's a Bal Derech Eretz. That's something very rare today. Today, chutzpah is in vogue. Chutzpah is the way to go today. Today, you see, it's very, very rare to find a person today who is a Baal Derech Eretz.
That's the Gemara. In the time to
chutzpah yaske. Excellent. So here, it's an incredible chiddush, is that the definition of the Melech HaMashiach is he go against the trend. Because we say that Areshes Sefosah Baal Menata Selah. And we learned yesterday from Rashi, quotes Menachem, that says that it relates to Melech Paras. The word Rishon there means permission, and thus, what it seems to be saying is that the Melech HaMashiach is going to ask permission. Asking permission is the ultimate dogma of Derech Eretz, Midois Toivos, to ask permission. You go to a shul, we make Kiddush. What do you say when you make Kiddush? The first thing, Savri. What does it mean, Savri? It means permission. Savri, I ask for permission from Meronon V'Rabbanon V'Rabbosai to lead the Oilam in reciting Kiddush. Savri is a word which means I ask permission. Where we say you bench. So Rabbi Sai Nivarech, Yishem Hashem Nivarech Me'atav Yadolam B'reshus HaKoyhanim V'Habalabayis Meronon V'Rabbanon V'Rabbanon and the Rabbanon V'Rabbi Sai Nivarech. You go on. When you leave the benching, you ask permission. B'reshus. When you begin Kiddush, you say Savri. Savri is an Aramaic word which means I ask permission. I ask permission. When we daven every day, we say the Malachi Asher Sechul Vestem Rishus Zela Zela Haktish Liyitzram Benachas Ruach. The Malachi Asher before they say Kadosh Kadosh Kadosh, they ask permission. So it's a very powerful concept to be a Baal Derech Eretz. Now Derech Eretz is someone else. It's a very, very rare trait in this world. By the Goyim, it doesn't exist, period. By Klal Yisrael, it's not so easy to find. Today, like I said, the way is chutzpah, and sometimes the chutzpah is totally off the charts. And therefore, the Melech HaMashiach, the first thing it says about him over here is the Areshes Sefosa Balmanat Asela, his desire you'll give him, and when he will ask permission, you will not deny it. It's a revelation that the Melech HaMashiach is a person of Baal Derech Eretz, and people will follow in that way. Okay, the leader's behavior really does make a difference. He's a role model for Derech Eretz. With all of the milus of Trump, Abachal, with all of his milus, and now in hindsight we realize we're up the creek, and everyone. With all his milus, he had one very big chasar. She wasn't a very big Baal Derech Eretz. No, it's not very. That's a problem. No, it's a problem. You obviously 99.9% of the population will say is that it's okay. His other milus, way.
It's okay in self-defense.
Way outweigh the problem, but it is a problem because a leader, people have a natural tendency. When you hear about a person in the news the whole day, and every day he's making with sonnets of this one, of that one, and curse that one, and say he's, it's not a good thing for society. It's not. It's a problem.
But
like I said, 99% of people will tell you.
If it's in self-defense, though, of course, maybe that's not the Jewish way.
Right.
But in terms of self-defense.
This was a debate in ancient times, 4 years ago, when he was running for office, when the world was more stable than it is today, not that it would ever was stable, and people were talking about it, they're going to vote for Trump. People spoke about this. they spoke about this topic is, yeah, how do you deal with a candidate, a political candidate, and Tzad Echad is a Baal Derech Eretz, but his policies are lethal. His policies are horrific for the country or for your purposes.
Well, that's what you see all the time now. They say, but we don't have mean tweets.
The world's on fire. The world's on fire.
We don't have mean tweets.
Oh, but the world's on fire. Right. The world's coming to an end. Obviously, there's a limit. Obviously, when you have a situation like you have today, people are desperate. But it's a problem. It's a problem. And the Melech HaMashiach is an incredible insight from Menachem. It's a Baal Derech Eretz. Pasuk Dalet. You have preceded him with blessings of good. You have set upon his head a crown of gold. Okay, so this pasuk indicates that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has preceded with the Melech HaMashiach with blessing. Hashem gave the Melech HaMashiach blessing even before he asked for it. And in addition, you have put upon his head a crown of gold. What does all this mean? Blessed in the Suda Yitzhava Pasek Dalit. Ki sikadmenu taktim litin lebrichas toiv term yishal olaf. You have already in advance given him blessings of goodness before he asked for it. V'hoya terem yikra. How does the pasuk go? Term yikra vayaneni, vani ene. Even before you make a request, Hashem already has given you what you need. This will be fulfilled with Melech HaMashiach. Tisikadmenu. In advance, you have given him blessings of good. Further in the mitzvahs, ateres pas return to lema kavod harbe. You put upon his head a crown of gold. The mitzvahs learns this is a metaphor: honor, kavod, respect. People, a person that is a respectful person, his words count. Rashi, ki sikadmenu birchos toiv koidim shesha'alti mimcha. Before, now Rashi is learning l'shit hasoi. Rashi, over here there's a very big difference in Rashi and the other commentators. All of the other commentators, kimat, b'liyotz m'naklal, understand this to be referring to the Melech HaMashiach. As we spent a lot of time yesterday, Rashi did not want to go down that path, because if you're going to go down that path, Melech HaMashiach, you're getting yourself into trouble with the apikorsim, with the notes from, especially when Rashi was writing this commentary. This was the beginning of the First Crusade. Now, it's a little bit difficult, because during the time of the First Crusade, it doesn't seem that there was a development yet in their theology where they wanted to engage the Jews in debate. Maybe I'm totally wrong. It seems to me that this whole era of where Jews and Christians debated the disputations was later. Was it a later time? It was maybe, I don't know the exact dates, of the 12th century, the 13th century.
Well, think about it. When did it happen in Paris?
In the 13th century. 1242.
There you go.
1242. That's the time. And later on, right. So it didn't really start until the 13th century. The First Crusade was the 11th century. We're dealing here 200 years before. And I don't know, I can be totally wrong, I have no idea, my knowledge of history is pathetic, but it seems that it was just a violent time. It didn't have much to do, the church and the Pope, and they whatever they were doing over there, and then they had these bloodthirsty mishugai roaming the streets, had nothing to do with themselves, they weren't too religious, and they just and they really fighting the Muslims more than the Jews, and they were just bloodthirsty barbarians. They were not intellectuals.
The Dark Ages, and we had the only light on.
Exactly. They were not people. They were not people who were even capable of having conversation. They were barbarians. These were knights. There was a whole there was a hierarchy of warriors who just basically barbarians, knew how to do nothing in their life but kill people and murder people. They are not people that are coming to you and having sitting down with you, having a conversation about religion, about Yashka and about Klal Yisrael. That developed later in world history, in the 13th century.
He didn't like public consumption, did he?
He did. Rashi, not for the non-Jews, Rashi definitely wrote for public consumption for the Jews. Mm-hmm. For the Jews, absolutely. Absolutely. So it's a little bit interesting to me that Rashi over here, in this first Rashi, says, L'shuva saminim, that, you know, in order not to engage them in debate, so read, let's interpret this mizmor in reference to David HaMelech. David is describing his own personal life, his own personal struggles in life, and we have what to learn from this. And we can analyze this and we can discuss this. And Rashi shied away from interpreting this, as it says in the Medrash and in the Targum, and other Mefarshim who learned this mizmor exclusively referring to the Melech HaMashiach. And it's a bit surprising, because Rashi, I listen, maybe this goes to that, I don't know what I'm talking about.
If you look at this,
yeah.
Common, we're here now, he would say, but it's written in the third person. He's not talking about himself.
No, he is. According to Rashi, he is.
I mean, that's a difficulty.
Okay, fine, that's a difficulty, but that Rashi says overlook that difficulty, and this is how we're going to interpret the pasuk. Because we don't want to interpret this pasuk in reference to the meaning, because we don't want to engage them. We don't want to engage them in conversation. But the problem is, when Rashi wrote this, there was no one to talk to anyway. There were no debates. I don't think we find in history any big famous disputations in the time of Rashi. We don't find this. We just find there. It was just murder. It was just blood. There wasn't a dialogue. And yet Rashi, obviously Rashi either al pi ruach hakodesh, Rashi he knew, Rashi saw what was coming, Rashi had insight to see the future, or to either a ruach hakodesh, some type of kedusha, or maybe just he was a smart man and he was able to see the writing on the wall. He saw how the world is developing. Rashi already saw the, what is it called, the tail leaves? Is that what we call it? Is that what it's called?
Tea leaves.
He saw the tea leaves of what is coming for the Jewish people down the line. You get a certain indication of how things are developing, like in politics. Certain people, and Rashi, even though he was not relevant in his time, he already knew. So he wrote this commentary, which he believed would be around for a very long time, and to prepare people, don't give them ammunition. Don't give our enemies ammunition to write a mizmar and make a big statement. This mizmar is a reference to the Melech HaMashiach, and that's going to immediately awaken them. That's right, the Melech HaMashiach. And do you know who is the Melech HaMashiach? It's Yoshka, Yeshu HaNotri. Excellent. In other words, don't give them ammunition. And even though in the time of Rashi, the people, there was no dialogue. Rashi saw what was coming down the pipeline. Okay, so back to this Rashi, it says, so Rashi over here, first right away, Rashi says, we're not discussing Melech HaMashiach. We are discussing a David himself. And David is making a statement. David is saying, Kodem Shasho'alti Mimcha Hik Damtoli Birchoscha Ali Dei Nosan Hanavi. Before I made any request from you, you already came to me. Your bracha came to me through Nosan Hanavi, Vaki Moisi es Zaracha, Vaki Moisi es Kisei Mamlachtecha al Yisrael Le'olam. I already received word from Nosan Hanavi that I will be successful. Now, when Shmuel is the one who anointed David. When Shmuel disappeared very quickly, Shmuel was out of the picture very quickly. Shmuel was one who anointed David, and then David had a relationship. Who was his rabbi? His rabbi became Nosan Hanavi and God Hachoizeh. Two, he had three rabbis. It's like today. Today, how many shuls does everyone in this room daven? How many shuls do you daven? How many? Only one shul? Two shuls. This shul and Rabbi Horowitz. Shabbos, you daven here, right? We have both, back and forth. Mr. Marillas, how many shuls are you davening?
Which one?
J.F. Lodge. Mayor, how many shuls are you davening?
only one shul. You hang out in Voretsk in the Vyalopol quite a bit. No, you don't hang out in Vyalopol. You know more about Vyalopol than everyone there knows. You never step in there. You're very little to Rabbi Eisen posing. Okay, very good. I realize how much shul he's davening.
Well, on Shabbos, I daven my shul, or I believe I daven another shul. But very often I find myself in another shul.
I hang out at least, Mr. Cohen, how many shuls do you daven in? Only one shul. Wow, you're a good guy. You're a loyal.
Most of the time, I mean,
you're a soldier. You're a soldier. I'm not a soldier. I'm very weak. I hang out in at least four places. At least four places, maybe even five places. And I really feel like a part of each one of them. I feel a part of the shul.
Are you a member of each one?
You know, I'll tell you the problem. The problem is where I go, it's very strange. There's no membership fees. And it's very hard to believe such a concept. Can you believe such a thing? It was actually, it's bizarre to believe such a thing. Yeah. There is no membership. No, in this shul there is membership fees, right?
Right.
So I'm a free rider. I don't pay any membership fees over here.
I'm sure you're not the only one.
Okay. I don't daven here in the morning. I daven mincha once in a while when I'm here. That's enough. If I have the money, I have a duty to pay membership fees. I should. I really
You're
should.
Part of the staff. No.
Not part of the staff. I don't know. I'm not sure.
From my experience,
about the boat that comes to this island, and there's two shuls. They ask them, "Did you hear? What do you mean two shuls?"
That's the one that I don't daven in.
I should daven in that shul.
Right, the person on the stranded island,
Mary Eisenman sent out yesterday a short bar. He says he took over a shul that was no mechitza, people walked by, they didn't want to go into the shul, even though they knew he had a Rav Dovid Feinstein said it's fine. And then it came from a chinuch conference. He says there was a Kaporsky who lived in the neighborhood. It was a Chernobyl angel who walked in and he gave him a shtar. He wanted him to sell the chametz for him. As soon as he walked in, everybody started talking about the shul.
By example. And Flavisher would never happen though. All right, but over here, David, I'm just giving you an example. David had three rabbis. Can I say David had three rabbis? He had three shuls. David, he had Shmuel Hanavi, Nasan Hanavi, and God HaChoyze. Three rabbis. Did he have them all at the same time? I don't know. Maybe he did. They're all around. They all lived together during the same era. David had three shuls, three rabbinic figures who had a major influence on his life. And he looked. He had a Rebbe also. He had a Rebbe. Who was his Rebbe? His Rebbe was, I forgot his Rebbe's name. He had a Rebbe. David in front of his Rebbe was extremely, extremely humble. He had a Rebbe. The Gemara tells the Rebbe's name. No, those are Chavrusas. No, those turned out to be bitter enemies. They were jealous. Those were contemporaries.
No.
Doeg Nachitev on Yoav. Yoav was his employee. He was an employee which the whole Navi, and then at the end he turned sour against him. Whole story.
It says in that Pirkei Avot, even if he learns one thing from him, he's
a Rebbe. David had a Rebbe, and he had at least, I've got his name, and he had three rabbis, Shmuel, God, Achiz, and Nos, and Navi, and plus his Rebbe, that's four. And it says, Chazal saying very clearly, when David came into the Beis Medrash, and we saw a beautiful article on this, written in very utter detail, all the Maharei Chazal, David had a policy that even though he was the key manager of the President of the United States, wherever he goes, they play all the music and he's surrounded by Secret Service, v'chulu. That's it. Once you're the President, that's it. Whatever move you make, you're in a league by yourself. David was the Melech of Klal Yisrael. It was no different in those days. The Melech is the Melech. Wherever the Melech goes, he's the Melech. Yet David had a policy that when he comes to the Beis Medrash, he's a regular guy. He's a regular guy. You address him when he sits in the Beis Medrash. He comes to the Kollel to learn the Beis Medrash. comes to night seder, he comes to a daf yom shir, you call him David. You don't call him the Melech. There's no secret service. There's no big day malchus. When David walked into the Beis Medrash, his policy was, he took off his big day malchus, he puts on, you know, his cap, he looks just like mayor. And he sits down, and you call
king
him,
mayor, king.
You don't call him king, you call him David. That was his policy. In the Beis Medrash, I'm a regular guy. What?
No one
bowed down? No, that's what it says. Outside the Beis Medrash, he's the Melech. Melech, all the bells and whistles. All the bells and whistles, probably a lot more than you can possibly imagine. But in the Beis Medrash, he demanded from the people that when I walk in, I pass the threshold of the Beis Medrash, I walk into shul, I am a regular guy, a regular, ordinary person, no different than anyone else. That's an incredible humility, incredible, incredible concept. In any event, over here, it says over here, Nasan HaNavi gave David, before David even made any request, Nasan HaNavi told him in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he's going to receive incredible blessing. I will establish your malchus forever. David had a very special crown. Okay, there's a whole lot of midrashim. David, it seems, had some type of indentation in his head. Okay, his head was not your typical head. There was some type of bizarre indentation in his head. And when they made the crown was custom made, and the crown had that was custom made to fit into that indentation. And it seems that the gene of David was dominant. And anyone that was a descendant of David, any one of his children, had that same bizarre, that same abnormal indentation in his head, which meant that the crown would fit on the head. But a person who was not a descendant of David, did not have David's genes, the crown would not fit. Okay, you could say something very physical, you know, every person, you know, there's a certain genes that are dominant and people have. Like, you know, salivatric. You ever talk to a salivatric? All the salivatrics, it's unbelievable. The salivatric gene is so dominant. It's almost comical. You know, you ever meet the salivatrics? You know a salivatric in your neighborhood? They're all the same. They have this gene of. It's an intensity. I'll call it stamina. There's the stamina of just, you know, they don't deviate. They just, the average person like me, you get tired. Yeah, you can sway this way and azoy and azoy and azoy. My cousins are salivatrics. My mother, sister, Baruch Chaim Tovim is married to a salivatric, to Rav Aaron Salivatric's son. And all of my first cousins, they're all salivatrics. And we all have this, their uncle is a salivatric. And all the kids, it's a dominant gene. There's a stamina that's unusual. Okay, Sorotskins. You ever meet the Sorotskin family?
Mm-hmm.
They're very, very tough. They're very... It's not stamina. I wouldn't say it is stamina, but it's a march. They have this ability. Yeah, a certain
focus?
Common thread.
Focus?
Yes, focus. But it's more than focus. It's to move forward, march, move forward. I'm trying to describe it the best I can. It's different than the salivatrix. Salvatrix is not. I don't look at their dominance as moving forward. It's stamina. It's they can stay in the same place, and no one can sway them. The Sorotskins, it's different. It's take marching orders, move forward. Don't. It's unique, and you need a Sorotskin. Don't get in his way. Don't get in their way. They have this power, this trait. David, obviously, the Malchus of David, that's what a Yichus is. There's a certain predisposition to behave and to conduct yourself in a certain way. Part of that is the physical. David had a physical, unique mold, a unique structure to his head, that the crown was custom made to fit this crown, and anyone that was an imposter to the throne of David, the crown would not fit. Okay, the crown would not fit. So here it says, you put upon him Toshis L'Roshoi Ateres, a crown of puz, of gold. So this over here is a there are seven types of gold. Puz is a certain type. I don't know which type it is, but it's a certain type of gold. There's a hierarchy of different types of gold. There's Zahav Toiv, the Zahav Tahor, is the Stam Zahav, Zahav Tahor, Zahav Toiv. There is, okay. Say again?
Mixture.
No, mixture just means that it's one piece. That's not a type of gold.
Instead of
no, that's they made plates, but they use certain types of gold. Puz is a certain type of gold.
Fine gold.
And it's made, they're different colors of gold, different. Fine gold. Puz. And Puz is the Gematria 87. 87 is a very important number in the world of Gematrias. 87. Roishoi Kesem Puz. Baruch Sha'amar is 87 words. There are exactly 87 words in Baruch Sha'amar. Roishoi, the beginning of Pesukei Dezimra, is Kesem Puz. Kesem is another word for gold. Is Kesem, maybe in a general word, is of the finest gold. The beginning of Pesukei Dezimra begins with a composition that if only we knew the secrets behind what it says in this composition, we would probably say it with a lot more kavana. It's Puz 87, or 87 words in the first brach of Baruch Shama V'Choyi Ho'ilam Puz. The number 87 comes up in many different areas. Let me see if I have over here written down. I have a little machberes on numbers. I like to collect numbers. Let me see what I put in for number 87. I have a couple of 87s. Okay, what I write down over here, Baruch Sha'amar, how many words are there in Modim? In Modim, there are also 87 words. Modim anachnu lach shu'atu Hashem lachenu, that's 87 words. How many words are there in Behoidohas Ezra? Okay, I don't know what that means. I wrote down over here a long time ago. I guess probably in Sefer Ezra, he gave a shevach to Hashem, 87 words. The minyanat heves lamatzech al mus leben b'mizma l'David oyed Hashem cholibi. Okay, when David's son died, we learned this mizma. When David had a son after the ma'aseh of Bathsheba got pregnant. Bathsheba got pregnant from David. When David took Bathsheba into his possession and he lived with her, she was pregnant, and that's why he called back Uriah Hachiti from the battlefield and told Uriah to go live with Bathsheba so people will say that the child was from Uriah, not from David. And that cover-up did not work because Uriah refused to go home to his wife. Instead, Uriah wanted to go back to the battlefield. And then David, then Bathsheba did indeed have a child, and everyone found out what David did. The world found out what David did because, well, how? How do you know David lived with Bathsheba? How come David was not able to cover it up? Because Bathsheba was pregnant. Because Bathsheba was pregnant. That's how. Because the mice of David Bathsheba resulted in Bathsheba becoming pregnant. So she has a baby. Oh, excuse me, who's the father? Who is the father of this baby? Is Uriah her husband? Can't be. Uriah is in the battlefield. He never came back. Check the records. Check the easy pass. The easy pass, his car never went over the Brooklyn Bridge or over the Verrazano Bridge. By the way, when you go over the Brooklyn Bridge, they record that you've gone over the Brooklyn Bridge with your easy pass. They may not actually charge you, but they're tracking you. You know, they track you all over the city. You have an easy pass in your car, wherever you go, they're tracking you. The city tells you this. It's not a secret. So if you have control, what they'll tell you that we do it for to know how to traffic control. It's for the good of the city. There's a hana in controlling people. There's the human
money.
It's human condition to control people. If you're in a position of authority, there's a yetzer hara that is uncontrollable to control them more. If you're in charge of this city, why not? Why can't we install devices all over the city to track where all the cars are going through their easy pass? Right? Isn't that very easy?
I don't think most people want to control other people. Even supervisors, they just want the people to do their jobs. It's kind of sickness to know how efficient.
No, it's a human condition. That's what happens. All right, anyway, 87. So what else? And then it says of the base. How old was the base Yosef when he died? He was 87 years old. I wrote that down. The base Yosef? No, it's not. Today's the base Yosef. The coincidence of me saying this is too much over the top. Today's the base Yosef. Yosef Cairo.
Right.
Are you serious?
No, yes.
You serious? Say it's the other side? So if that's really true, what are the chances that I would mention the number 87 and tell you that Beis Yosef lives at the age of 87 and they have his yard side, you gotta know who his yard side. You know what the chances are? Zero. No, it's not one in a billion. It's not one in a trillion. It's not one in, it's zero. The chances are zero. It's a hashkocha process.
It's also the Auschwitz yard side and
Hashkocha Prata story is the chances are zero, not one in a trillion. Zero. He was 87 years old. There's a very big mystery about the Beis Yosef when he died. Because the Malach told him, the Beis Yosef, he had a safe called the Magid Meshorim. Every night when he went to sleep, a Malach came to him. He lived not so long ago, the Beis Yosef. He only lived like 300 years ago, something like that. He went to sleep, a Malach came to him and learned with him the Harus in his dreams. And every morning he wrote down all of the things that they told him in Shemayim, all of the Chidush Torah that he learned with the Malach. The Malach revealed him in Shemayim. At the same time, the Gro lived. I think it was at a similar time, Malachim also came to the Gro to learn with the Gro b'Chavrusa when he went to sleep. And the Gro said, "I don't want to learn with you. You're not a good Chavrusa for me. Get lost." It's true. The Gro had the same opportunity to learn with Malachim, and the Gro dismissed the Malachim. I want to learn myself. I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear what. I don't want to hear the. What? I don't know. You got the wrong guy. You're talking to the wrong guy. I don't know what these things mean. But
no one tells me.
I have no idea what these things mean.
I don't even learn when I'm awake.
I'm with you. But the Gra, and it's a very different approach to life. The Mag, the Beis Yosef, wrote Shulchan Aruch. The Beis Yosef and Kesef Mishnah and the Rambam, he learned every night with the Malach, and he wrote down all of the things that they told him are going on in Shemayim in the Sefer called Magid Meshorim. The Magid, the Malach was called the Magid. It is a fascinating Sefer, and it's quoted by everyone, and there are a lot of beautiful, incredible insights to the Chol Torah Kula in this Sefer. The Magid Meshorim, the Gra had the same opportunity, and the Gra said, "No, thank you. I don't learn with Malachim. I'm in this world. I learn with people in this world. I don't want to learn with Malachim." The Magid, which is the Malach, told the Beis Yosef he will die al Kiddush Hashem. This is one of the biggest mysteries about the Beis Yosef. He will die al Kiddush Hashem. He will be killed al Kiddush Hashem. And it never happened. He died a peaceful, natural death. And there's been enormous amount of material written. How could that be? If the Beis Yosef said that he's going to be the Mag, they told him in Shemayim that he's going to die Kiddush Hashem, how come he never died Kiddush Hashem? He died a natural death.
Maybe Kiddush Hashem is not only
You don't aspire to it. You don't aspire to it.
No, but Kiddush Hashem doesn't have to mean that,
Okay, but in the context of the way it was explained was that he lived also in very dangerous times. He lived in dangerous, violent times, which meant one is meant. So there's a lot of discussion. Okay, there is a lot of discussion about what this means. Okay, but the point over here, and how old was he when he died? He died when he was 87 years old. Pause. I just mentioned that over here, there in Agav, over here, Toshis Lidoshoi Ateres, a crown of Puz, 87. Roshoi Kesem Puz, Hashkacha Pratis, we're learning about this pasuk on the day, I don't even know, of the Yartz of the Beis Yosef, who lived 87 years old. The Ateres, and he was Taka for Klal Yisrael, a crown of Oz. The Shulchan Aruch is mamish, the crown of Klal Yisrael.
Who's this?
The Beis Yosef. Rav Yosef Cairo. Rav Yosef Cairo is your site is today. Zuchuso Yogin Elenu. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch. He wrote the book, the real book.
He also wrote the Kesef Mishnah
on the Rambam. Yeah. It's all intertwined. The Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, and he wrote the Beis Yosef on the Tur, and he summarized in the Shulchan Aruch, which is a summary. It was meant to be learned, the Shulchan Aruch was really like an old-fashioned Daf Yomi. It was meant to be learned, you're supposed to learn the whole Shulchan Aruch every 30 days. The Shulchan Aruch is divided into 30 portions. And every 30 days he's supposed to go through, that was his intent, to go through the entire Shulchan Aruch. And they actually started printing today. They started printing today like the whole Shulchan Aruch divided into 30 sections. No Ramah. That was before the Ramah. The Ramah came along and he says, it's not fair. Your Sefer is for the Sfardim. This is for the Sfardim. What about the Ashkenazim? You're coming to Pasch and all the Halachas based upon the Beis Yosef. Basically, he was also a trailblazer, because what did the Beis Yosef do?
What he did was
scientific. He was a scientist. He's the one that's credited for creating a halachic system that is scientific. He took three of the major Rishonim, the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam, and he looked what they said, and the majority. Whatever the majority is, that is the halacha. What was the flaw in this, the scientific flaw that everyone viewed in lack? Two of the three were Sfardim. The Rif and the Rambam are Sephardim. And the Rosh was an Ashkenazi. Zelo fair. It's tainted. It's already slanted. It's already slanted towards the Sfardim. It's not fair.
He's very lucky he did it that way, because if he would have had two Ashkenazim, they would have never come to halacha.
So this is what he did, and he decided this is the way it's going to take that. Now what he did, you have to appreciate. So we take everything for granted today. This is a scientific approach to halacha. No one ever did this. To take halacha and just count. Eeny, meeny, to count. Everyone until this point of time, halacha, even go to rabbi today. You know what? You have a very difficult question. Libi oimer li. My heart tells me this should be the halacha. And then you back it up. You back it up and you can maneuver. And there's a lot of legitimacy to that.
Yeah,
okay? There's a lot of legitimacy. The Rishonim, they say, they pass in halacha, they say things, and you work backwards. This is the way we do things. And I'll prove I'm right. And you'll go to the Gemara and you'll find a Rishon here, a Rishon there. And you'll put together a whole thing. And you have siyata d'shmaya. And you have a spirit of holiness. And you dive into Hashem, and it comes out. That's the way it comes out. That's the way it goes. That's the way it goes in halacha. That's not a problem. That's always the way it's been. The Yosef Cairo did a whole different approach. He said, we're not going to do that. We're going to take the scientific approach to halacha. And the Shulchan Aruch is the product of his scientific approach. But there was a protest, because this is slanted towards the Sfardim, because two of the three are Sfardim, the Rambam and the Rif. So along came the Ramah. And the Ramah said, listen here, this is the way we're going to do it. This is the way Ashkenazim. And the Ramah did something no one ever did before, and no one will ever do again. And that is, when you want to disagree with someone, so what do? I'll write my own Shulchan Aruch. I don't agree with you. This is not fair. I don't agree with you. I'll write my own Shulchan Aruch, according to the Ashkenazim. He didn't do that. He did something no one would ever do and no one will ever do. He took the work of the Mechaber, of the Beis Yosef, and he injected into the Beis Yosef, into the Shulchan Aruch. This is what the Beis Yosef said. What?
The Mishnah Berurah did the same thing.
The Mishnah Berurah, not really. Yes and no, not really. It was a commentary. The Mishnah was a commentary. It's a little bit different.
I heard that the Ramah actually had a whole Shulchan Aruch that he wrote himself, but the Beis Yosef beat him to the... And instead of publishing this whole thing, he decided just to comment.
But he wanted to. He wanted to write his own.
He had it. I heard that he had it.
You already did it? Yeah. Okay, I don't know.
But he didn't publish it yet. and he resisted instead of writing his own sefer.
But what was the problem with Ramah? The Ramah was guilty of the same crime that he committed that he attributed to the Beis Yosef.
He was Germany.
Exactly. No, not Germany. The Ramah was Krakow. Was
yeah,
Poland.
Was
Poland.
It was no Poland.
What? Okay, in that, okay, he did not take, they were very upset with the Ramah, because you're telling the Minhag Ashkenaz in Krakow, v'chol ha'nilvim olav, what we call today Poland, that whole region. What about the Ashkenaz in France and
those
Germany?
Poland included what's today where they're fighting.
Ukraine, sure.
Chernobyl, Lvov. It's unbelievable. You read about all these in the Haggadah. You read about it in the Lashi, especially in the Haggadah. You read about all these stories about the Haggadah. All of this happened, mamish, right now. You see what's going on in the news. Mamish, can you imagine?
You see the maps.
It's unbelievable. This is where we all come from. The whole, all of our traditions, the Kiddush of Klal Yisrael was all in the Ukraine for 1,000 years. Almost 1,000 years. The place Mitzad Echad, Ukraine, is drenched in blood.
Right.
Mitzad Sheni is drenched in Kedusha. It's a contradiction. I mean, not a contradiction, but it's a shocking thing. The amount of Kedusha.
Well, that's where they found all the Jewish blood.
The amount of Kedusha that was put into the Ukraine. You know, Melamed Shehamokim Goyrim. When tzaddikim, they sit in the makom and they daven, they learn, it imparts into that makom kiddusha. And mitzad sheni, the place is a killing field for the Jewish people. It was a killing field. My own great-grandfather lived in Poland. He was a wanted man. He was one of the top wanted. He was a rav, the rabbiner, and they were out to get him, and he fled b'kuach nefesh here and there, and he escaped into the Ukraine. And then the Ukrainians caught him. And the Ukrainians tied him to a horse. They galloped with him alive into the forest, dragging his body on the ground as they got. That way they murdered him. And they just threw his body into the forest. Did not even bury him. And we don't even know where he was buried. The Ukrainians, the people you're watching on television,
right.
These are the grandchildren. These are the grandchildren that murdered my great-grandfather, and not everyone will tell you, everyone you talk to, yeah, my great-grandparents, my this, my that, they were killed by the Ukrainians, and the people that you're watching on television, the Ukrainian soldiers and this and this and this, these are the Einikloch, these are the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren of these people who collaborated with incredible zeal and a lashma to murder Acheinu B'nei Yisrael. And then go back to Tachvatat, go back to six. No, I'm not saying that. That's not my business to say. That's not my business to say. I didn't say that. I'm just telling you what the reality is. These are miyuchasim. These people you're watching on television over here, that Biden is saying we're going to give now another $800 million of all of your money, is going to give them weapons, to give them the koyach to overcome the Russians. The Russians are a sham also. Don't the people on the side of the Russians are also Reitzchem and murderers and cantonists and the czars and destroyed Russian Jewry. All these Russians that came to America, who destroyed them? Who destroyed them? The Russians. The people that you see, the Russians, they're funny. You see the tanks, the Russians,
right.
And you see the Ukrainians. These, this chevra, are the einikloch of the people who destroyed millions of Jews. And the Ukrainians, they're firing against a people, the Einiklach of people also destroyed. Which one is worse? Whose Zayde was the bigger Russia? I don't know. None of my business. None of my business. And
it makes part to take
some. None of my business. Listen, it's not our business. Lo yumsu avos al banim, ubanim lo yumsu al avos. It's Hashem's business, none of our business. And also don't forget that Ukraine is the place of the Khmelnytsky massacres. Okay? 1648, the Khmelnytsky. Khmelnytsky massacres, Tachvatat, which is one of the most horrific times of Jewish history. Some will argue that it was worse than the Holocaust. Okay, the numbers are not 6 million, you're dealing with at least 100,000. Some will tell you it's up to 500,000. And no one really knows the truth. No one even really knows what the numbers. And people were so, you know, the people, there's a whole incredible write-up about this new information that things that in the aftermath of the Chmelnytsky massacres, Jews were sold as slaves. They don't talk about that. They just talk about the massacres. But Jews were grabbed and they were sold mamish avod, and they were sold all over the world as literally slaves to other countries. It's, the horrors are incredible. And today, you know what's very tragic is they still today ad hayom hazeh in the Ukraine worship Chmelnytsky.
Yeah,
his statues. And they teach, Chmelnytsky. He was the biggest anti-Semite in the world. And you look at this, and like, we were sitting here in America, we're looking at this, and we scratch our heads, and we mamish have nothing what to say. We don't know what in the world is going on over there. We don't know what we're supposed to be feeling about this. And we're not mikubalim. We're not into the world of Kabbalah to go say, oh, it's payback. Listen, it's none of our business. Lo yumsu avos al banim, ubanim lo yumsu al avos. How does all of this work?
Because Baruch Hu knows his business.
Yeah, none of our business. None of our business.
Okay. It's not the way.
No one knows.
Remain Jewish.
What?
A person who identifies as I am Jewish. I was Jewish. My grandfather was, and he lived there. He's mamish.
You have look. They go. You go there. They go to Uman. They go every year, close to a half a million people make a pilgrimage to the Ukraine. Obviously, there's something there that draws them. There's some sanctity that's pulling people to go there every year. What?
Rabbi Nachman is the sanctity.
Rabbi Nachman, Breslov.
Now they go to the Uman Pizza.
The way we're going at this point, there's only one person that's going this year to Uman. Putin. Nothing to laugh about. That's the way it seems now.
They had on the news that the ones who were found out by the Ukrainians to be Russian spies or things like that, the turncoats, they cut off their heads, and the Ukrainians,
yeah,
they did the Russians, the what the Russians are doing to them.
You see the Midas
Achzorius.
You see some of these stories, the Midas Achzorius, and it's shocking.
Yeah.
You also have to say one thing, which nobody here mentioned. It was Stalin, it was Russia that saved the world during World War II. They're the ones that beat the Germans, unquestionably. And because of them, and Stalin was a Russian, but he saved many, many years. He really did. And they were sent to Siberia, and there a lot of them survived. He was a terrible person, but the Meister, it was Russia that saved the world.
It was Hitler's stupidity that he decided to do.
Because they kept retreating, they burned everything.
Life is complicated.
Right.
To me, if you study a little history and you look what's going on here now in Russia and Ukraine, you're like, what is going on here? There was one thing that, and this is before my time, but Iran and Iraq. I remember my father once said to me that the Iran-Iraq war is way before my time.
10 years, hundreds of thousands died, nobody cared.
Right? No one cared. My father said, he says, the policy of the United States was, he's telling you what was going on during those days, the Iran-Iraq war, he says, the United States secretly gave Iran money and weapons, and secretly gave Iraq money and weapons, and said, both of you, Yusri Matzliach, that was mamish what it was.
Yeah.
It's not a joke. That's mamish, but they gave them chemical weapons also. That was the big mistake. When the United States gave that, there's a gimmick. That's why they thought they gave Iraq. At the end, the United States made a lethal mistake by giving Iraq, not Iran, chemical weapons. And they got caught. And that was a big, big, big blunder. But before that, Yushri Matzliach, and Yushri Matzliach. And now you look at Ukraine and Russia, and Jews do not have a good history there.
Right. Ukraine and Russia, we don't care if they kill each other. Where is it going to go after that? The rest of Europe, exactly.
Aggression. Hitler. Hitler. You tolerate aggression.
The same thing is the Sudan.
Right, and also today, listen, Lo Yumsu Avos Al Banim. The Jews more or less don't live. There are Jews, yes, there are Jews, but the Jews have nothing to do with you. They sit there all by themselves. We have nothing to do with these people. It's not our business. I'm not living with them. This is not our place. So you look at this. We have different needs. The Jewish people today, matzah, costs more money. There's inflation. That's not only because of that, but what happens in the world today? We live in one big global village. Our needs today of what we need are very different than ma shahoya kvar hoya. On the other hand, you know, the Zid v'Cheshmer, their great grandparents were murderers. Mamish Reitzim. How do you grapple with this? I have not heard any rabbi, any gadol, try to give a hadracha in trying to understand how an Orthodox Jew today, in the 21st century, 2022, should look with a Torah perspective at this war that's taking place now, Russia and Ukraine. It's an impossible
thing.
That's
probably wise.
There's nothing, and on a political, the Israelis, everyone knows, they're torn. They're torn. On the one hand, they're part of Western civilization, Israel, which means you have to automatically bow to the Ukrainians and support them. Mitzad Sheni, who's the one providing all the intelligence, helping the Israelis from terror from Syria and from Iran? It's the Russians. It's the Russians. So you're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Okay, you want to go pander to the United States for the Kesef, to support you, send you some F-35s. Mitzad Sheni, you need the intelligence of the Russians where to use the F-35s. For your targets. Oh, and there are many immigrants, that's right, the law of return. How many people there have sympathy towards the Russians and Israel, and people have sympathy towards the Ukrainians? Life is so complicated, it's unbelievable. And as we come to the Mashiach, it gets more and more complicated. And besides the fact, no one even knows what's really going on there.
Right.
Every single 5 minutes, they'll tell you another story and spin it this way, and they'll say, oh, I made a mistake, yeah. All right, we need Hashem. Now, that all came out of one word, Paz. We all got into this because of Paz, because today is the yard site of Rabbi Yosef Karoi, the Mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch. There's another very important lesson. There's a tradition that at the time of Rabbi Yosef Karoi, I think Rabbi Yosef Karoi, when he wrote the Shulchan, there were three people who were eligible, who in Shemayim, this is a legend. No one came out to tell us how all this legend came to us, but there's a legend. Here, Rabbi Yosef, please, Rabbi Yosef. There's a legend that in Shemayim, oh, before I continue, I'm going to be in the lab show, I don't do this, I totally forgot. Today is the yard site of Baruch Horowitz's father. He went to the cemetery today, of his mother, and he asked me that we should learn Lezechu Le'ili Nishmas Miriam Etel Bas Rav Aaron Halevi. Miriam Neshama Avon Aliyah. Today is her yard site as well. That's why he's not here. He's in Beis Lachayim, and we're learning Lezechu Le'ilishmas again. We're talking Maras Miriam Etel Bas Rav Aaron Halevi. Now today is the yard site again of Yosef Cairo Zechus Yogin Aleinu. He was 87 years old when he died. Pause. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch when he lived. The legends, there were three people in his generation that were of the eligible, that had the brains, had the sanctity to write the Shulchan Aruch, which today is mamish water, air and water for us. And we have their name, and even the Levush Mordechai, the one with Levush Mordechai.
Yes.
He also ended up writing, but it was not the same. But he was selected. Why? Because he was humble. Humble. The Beis Yosef was a humble person. And that humility is what granted him the siyata d'shmaya through the mechaber of the Shulchan Aruch. So it's one thing you take today is to be humble. Me'oid, me'oid, hevei shefal ruach. That's the lesson of the day. The Beis Yosef's legacy is beyond belief. It's mamish. What? That's a milo. That's a milo. They don't put in cherim. They don't put in cherim. Regular people. They only put in cherim. Now, by the way, one last thing. Who followed in the wake of the Beis? Who is the?
So who were the three?
I don't have it. No, not the tour. No, the tour is before. He wrote a parish on the tour. The Beis Yosef. The tour was before. He didn't write the Shulchan Aruch on the tour.
He overshadowed him.
He later, the Beis Yosef was later. He's the next generation. The Beis Yosef was the next generation. There were three people. I don't have their name. There are three people. The Beit Tor came before. Okay, but going. This is one very important thing. Is that the person our generation?
Yeah, Rizal was
okay. That's a different matter. It was before. Rizal was before. But they would, Arizal didn't write. Arizal didn't write anything. Arizal was a mystic. He didn't write anything.
He didn't write
nothing. Garnish. He died very young. The Rav Chaim Vital.
They gave it to Rav Chaim Vital, right?
That was. But let's. There's one very important person that came out of that followed in the way of the Beis Yosef and our generation, and that is the Goyim HaAdir Rav Avadia Yosef Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Yabi Omer Chavadas and all of this. What was his technique? Exactly like the Beis Yosef, he was a counter. He went and he took out every single sefer you can find in this world when it came to a halakhic inyan, and he counted. And he put them on teams. And he counted. And the one that had the majority is the winner. You have a she'ela. What should you do? What is the correct procedure to do? The Yabiyo Imer, Yechavadash, it's massive, massive Marim HaKoymais. He goes through a sugya, it's written like mamish, like butter. And he goes through a sugya, and he goes through every single rishon and early acharon that existed, and he analyzed what they say, and he puts them on a team. And at the end of the day, when there's an issue, he counts. This is the majority opinion. Therefore, this is the halacha, case closed. The scientific approach to halacha.
Okay? So anyone who follows the minority opinion, is that common halacha?
Well, if you're a student of Ravadi Yosef, then the answer is no, you're not.
But how about all the people that were the minority opinion? They didn't follow the
those were different times. Elu the Elu, there are different traditions. People that are students who follow the Beis Yosef, the follower of Ravadi Yosef, his followers, you asked them a shayla, he told you this is the halacha. And this, among the Svardim, there are thousands and thousands that literally worship the dust of his feet, Rabbi Yosef, and they follow whatever the Rebbe says, the Chacham Rebbe Ovadia. They have tremendous respect. The Sfardim have incredible respect. The Ashkenazim have what to learn from the Sfardim. They have incredible respect for their Chacham, and they have. We live in a modern world, and there are modern questions, and they were posed to him, and he concluded. And if you're a Sfaradi, and he's your Chacham, you do what he says. You're not from that school, you're not from that camp, that machane. There are different machanes in Klal Yisrael. You're a litvak, so you go ask your rashiva. Your rashiva will tell you what to do. Or not a rashiva, your paisek. And your paisek will not necessarily tell you what the majority opinion. Look, today, almost everyone that I know at least is not makbid on eating on chodosh. After Pesach, listen, right after Pesach, they're going to have bread. How many supermarkets, how many bakeries are makbid to have kemach yoshon? Okay, well, right now it's not a problem. But when it gets to Sukkot time or the end of the summer, it's very not so easy to buy products in the store that are yoshon. A lot of the produce already becomes chodosh. So if you go study Shulchan Aruch and all the commentators, it is... The only one that says that you're allowed to eat yoshan today, bizman hazeh, in America, in Chutz Liaretz, is the Bach. The Bach is a minority opinion. You have stacked against the Bach 100 other equivalent, 100 other opinions that say in Chutz Liaretz you have an obligation to eat only chodosh. And there's no excuse, only yoshan, and there's no excuse today. And yet everyone in America doesn't seem to be bothered. They're following a minority opinion. A minority opinion. So what about the scientific method of halacha? What have happened to that? What happened to the scientific halacha of halacha? You follow the majority. We have established Gedolei Yisrael, established. And the vast, vast majority are of the opinion that it is categorically forbidden to put into your mouth grain that is chodosh. And yet no one seems to be bothered. Everyone seems to be eating chodosh. Yeah, you know, if you want, you know, some of the caterers, you know, they want to have a niche.
It's very widespread now, Rosh Hashanah.
Not so. Yes, it is. But people are not mocked, but people don't even know the difference. No one's coming to check. It became a thing. People are looking for a fed. It's not nikkur adin. It's a minority opinion. It's mamish, a minority opinion.
Well, they said many years ago,
drove of the grain.
Okay, it's a different time. I don't want to go there. I know. It's a different.
But after we gave the Russians all the
this
wheat,
is amazing.
It was Chodosh was
okay.
Now prevalent.
No, it's not a topic now. It's a different topic.
The dynamics changed.
It's a different topic. A big topic. But the bottom line is, it's minority opinion. No one has a problem with this. They say to die the Bach with this legend that when the Bach died, I love this story. When the Bach passed away, so they say, I don't know who says this. I don't know what they all say this. When he came to Shemayim, they let out the whole Gehenim in honor of the Bach coming to Shemayim. The entire Gehenim was released. Because that's why I have so many problems today. They came back here. All the criminals were released. In his honor, everyone got freedom. In Shemayim, Gehenim was opened. Such a person that they opened up Gehenim for, it's Kedai, we can be soymech on the Bach, and you can eat today in Chutz La'aretz. Chodosh! Ah, what about Rav Avadya Yosef? And what about the Beis Yosef? The scientific method of halacha, count the numbers, do the math. Who says that's the proper way to learn halacha? All right, we went off on the major tangent. Let's do one more pasuk. One more pasuk, then we have to stop.
Okay. We have to go.
Now it's not a problem. Now Pesach, it's everything now is Yoshan. It's not possible. When you eat matzah, it's already Yoshan. This was the crown of David. One more pasuk. This is a very powerful pasuk. Chayim shoal mimcha nosati loy orech yamim oylam boed. This is an incredible pasuk, incredible insight. David is providing for us secrets that you're not going to find in Yeshaya, you're not going to find in Zechariah, you're not going to find in Yirmiyah, and Yechezkel, about Yemos HaMashiach, that the Melech HaMashiach is going to make a request from the Ribbono Shel Olam. He's going to ask him, I need life, I need to live. Don't we all need to live? Everyone needs to live. But he's going to make an extra special request. Chayim Sho'al Limecha, the Melech HaMashiach requested from you, Hashem, life. Nasatuloi, you gave it to him. Oirech Yamin, you gave him the length of days, Oilom Voed forever. Let's see the mitzvahs. A lot of secrets in this pasuk. The mitzvah is David, pasuk.
What page
are you on? Page 187. 186. Chayim Shoal, Omer Razal, Kasher Yire Moshiach ben David Shenerag Moshiach ben Yosef. When Moshiach never would witness, the Rash will witness the death of Moshiach ben Yosef, he's afraid that's going to happen to me, I'm also going to die. Yishal oz alachayim v'Hashem yavtichoy olof. Look at the Likutei Shas on the very bottom. On the very bottom, Chayim shal mimchav nasat v'leitav rabban Moshiach ben David sh'asim li'igolois b'meher v'yameinu. Moshiach ben David that will reveal himself very soon. Ask me whatever you want. What do you want? I'll give you whatever you want. Shenemar asapura el choik. Ani ayam yiluditicha. This is the part we had this before. I will speak el choik. Ani ayam. I will speak about a law. I don't even remember what that means. We learned that only a few weeks ago. Today, I, Hayom Hashem responds, Hayom Yeliditich, I have given birth to you. Sha'al, this thing. Now, here we come to this passage. We're combining psukim. We're combining what it says. All right, but that's the passage of Mizmah Beis. V'chevon she'ro'o Moshiach ben Yosef she'nerag oimer l'fona ribayna sh'loyla me'ini raka she'mecho el chayim. I want to live. Oimer loy chayim. You want to live. Ad sh'loy amarta, before you even made this request, kevar hisnabe olecha David avicha. David, your forefather, already saw you and asked me that, and he already prayed for you. She'nemar chayim sh'al mimcha nosat loy. David saw that you would make that request, and David saw that I would give it to you. Very strange chazal. Okay, the Melech HaMashiach does no Tehillim. The Melech HaMashiach didn't come to the morning kollel. How could it be? How could it be? He didn't know this pasuk. So that's what it says. It says that the Melech HaMashiach is going to ask, he's going to see. Now we know there are two Mashiach. There's the Mashiach ben Yosef and there's Mashiach ben David. Who is the Mashiach ben Yosef? Okay, no one really knows any of this. Some will suggest it's a political Mashiach. The political Mashiach, and then comes the religious Mashiach. The Mashiach that's focused on Kedusha, V'hoi Hashem L'melech, similar to Ezra Nehemiah. Ezra was the spiritual guy, and Nehemiah was the political leader. Okay? Nehemiah was such a Kodosh. His Kedusha was infinitely greater than anyone that we can imagine today. But yet, relative to Ezra, he was the politician. Relative to Ezra, Nehemiah was the politician, and Ezra was the religious leader. And likewise, when Mashiach will come from the Malchus of Beis David, Ezra, there's a Mashiach ben Yosef that will precede Mashiach ben David. And somehow in this process of the unfolding of Mashiach, it says that Mashiach ben Yosef will be killed in some type of war or event, battle. And there will be a very great eulogy. There will be a very big, the whole world will come to eulogize. And when this happens, the Mashiach ben David will realize that he is also a target. He's also a wanted man. He also may die. And he will then make a request of Hashem, I don't take for granted my life. I need from you an extra dosage of siyata d'shmaya to live. And that's what it says here in this pasuk. Chayim sho'al mimicha. He will ask for life. And at that time Hashem will say, Nosatoloi, I give it to you. I will protect you. Oirech yamim, with the length of days, oilam vo'ed, forever and ever. Notice it does not say years. We know that in life there are two different types of arid. There's arichas yamim and arichas shanim. Length in years and length in days. Over here we have a new concept. A new concept called olam vo'ed. What does that mean? I don't know. Forever and ever. How does that fit into the equation of life? There are days. There is something called an olam vo'ed. And there's something called years. And years, for whatever reason, is not mentioned here in this expression. There are three dimensions to life. Days, years, and an olam. And maybe you add an olam vo'ed. Obviously, each one has a different dimension. There's a chazal that says, olam chod, there's a famous gemara, I think it's in Moed Katan. I think it's in Moed Katan, where I don't remember, where the gemara is where Rabbi Chia, I think it was Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Chia said to his children, you're going away, they were going to learn somewhere. Before you go to this person, I don't know who the person was, maybe it was Rabbi Chia himself, and ask them for a blessing. And they went to the blessing, and the blessing was, Olam Chai Yireh B'chayev. You should see your Olam in your lifetime. These students, they ask the Rebbe for a blessing. And included in the blessing was this expression. It's a magnificent expression, which is subject to much interpretation. And obviously, that part of the interpretation, it's hidden in this pasuk. He said to them, Oilamcha, your world, you should see in your lifetime. What does that mean? Your world, you should see. See in your lifetime. It's very mystical. But one thing is for sure, whatever that means, it's rooted in this pasuk here. Because in this pasuk it says, here it says, Chayim Sho'al. The Melech HaMashiach made a request for life. And Hashem granted him Nasat Le'orech Yamin Oilam Voed. Hashem granted him an Olam Voed. So Hashem gave the Melech HaMashiach Oilamcha Yireh B'chayav. Now, in addition, he also granted him Orech Yamin. So you see that this concept of seeing your world, oilon void in your life, the combination of chayim and oilon, is something that's very unique to Mashiach, to the Melech HaMashiach. And the Melech HaMashiach is a person who brings about transformation, brings about a change for the better. The world is a dark place. The Melech HaMashiach is to bring or light. So when you give a person a bracha, oylamcha, yireh b'chayav, your world, you're connecting to the Melech HaMashiach who was granted oylam voed and chayim. And the Melech HaMashiach, by definition, is a person that brings about change for the better. You're giving a person the blessing that in your lifetime you should witness a transformation. It's not just that people can live a long life and it's all the same. It's all the same. The world is all the same. For the last 2,000 years, it's just regurgitating the same exact nonsense. I guarantee you, if you take out, you got to try this. Go online and try to find somewhere the Jewish press from 30 years ago. 30 years ago, find a Jewish press about Israel, the matzav an article. Take it out, cross off the dates, go and put it on the table and ask someone to read it. And ask them to explain it to you. And they'll say, yes, yeah, talking about what's going on right now in Israel. Guarantee you. 30 years ago, right? It's unbelievable. You could literally take the newspaper from Jewish people, nothing has changed in there. And the same way, nothing has changed in 30 years, in the big picture of things, nothing has changed in the last 2,000 years. It's just regurgitating the same nonsense again and again. You want a bracha in life that by the time you leave this world, you should witness it's not the same. Just living long, arich hasyomim and arich hashem, is wonderful, you accomplish. You become a person who has accomplished, your neshama is overflowing with Torah and mitzvot and understanding. You take your religious experience with you to the next world. That's wonderful. But what about the world that you left? It was a tool. I lived in this world to absorb Yirah Shamayim. Wonderful. You can't expect more than that. But there's something very special in being able to witness a transformation in this world. People have a very big hanah. Let's say they have grandchildren, great, they want to witness, go to the wedding of their great-grandchild. They want to live. They're 100 years old. The doctor says you're not in a good state of health. And they want to merit to live just a little bit longer to witness in their lifetime the wedding of their great-grandchild. There's something to it. You want to take with you, I came into the world with nothing. And here I leave this world. I've witnessed in my lifetime my great-grandchild get married. A change. Then there's something very valuable to that. And that's in essence what the Melech HaMashiach has been granted, with this concept of Olam Voed. I'm not telling you a full idea, just trying to extrapolate a little bit. I'll have to continue next time, it's very late. We're going to take a very short break, and I want to finish off some halachos for the Seder. I want to go over the Shi'urim of Yayin and of Matzah, and maybe end off with a vart on some halacha and a vart on the Haggadah. So it seems that on Chol HaMoed, it doesn't seem like we have a shir. It's not likely, but maybe. The first day of Chol HaMoed is not going to be a shir. Today is the last shir. There's no shir tomorrow. There's no shir tonight.
I heard Mashiach's coming, so next shir is going to be in
the Mashiach will give the shir. Mashiach will give the shir. So there's no shir tonight. There's no shir tomorrow. The first day of Chol HaMoed, Monday, there's not going to be, definitely not going to be a shir. It's not likely it's going to be a shir. Maybe we'll see. I'll send out a text. I'll send it a little bit or online, or you can call me, and we will, not likely, but maybe, we'll see. And then after we'll resume on Yirtzeh Hashem on Isru Chag. Isru Chag is
Monday.
It's a Monday, so we're going to have some Monday. Monday.
Sunday
is Isru Chag, so we're going to resume on Monday. There's no show on Sunday, Baruch Hashem. We'll resume on Monday. Okay, we'll take a short break and then we'll do some halacha. Oh.
There's a big difference why you can't in the base. You should have lived in Eretz Yisrael. He wasn't going to go to Germany and give you the halachas of Germany.
Okay, but he obviously he knew he had his cheshbon. There's no question.
Yeah, but
that.
He was in Eretz Yisrael.
He had his cheshbon.
He was also in Eretz Yisrael.
In fact,
Rav Avadia has a lot of criticism from the Jews of even Morocco because he's passing according to the Egyptian and this. So they live. The Ramah doesn't give you Taimani halacha, he doesn't give you French. He gives what?
Ramah was writing for him the very nice shalom, which is for his side. It's tainted, it's slanted. I'm holding the Ashkenazim good. But it turns out that the Ramah was only writing about what Ashkenazim did in the Israeli region.
That's right.
The other Ashkenazim would be different.
My son works on branches here in the city. He works with Goyim, or Ukrainian. The Goyim. And you know what they told him? I was shocked. They told him that Putin is not.
Was a big Nazi.
I probably spoke to him after you did. Today? Today, right. I called him. When did you speak to him? Yesterday?
No, but Chakras today.
Oh, Chakras. So you're about in the same place.
Yeah.
I spoke to him about 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, okay. So that was it. Want to speak to Charlie? Yes, sir.
Yes.
Yes.
Thank you.